You're listening to the Brown Trout and Bridge Beers podcast.
Oh, there it is. Decent.
Hey guys, welcome back. It's been a while. We took a little bit of a summer break, if we want to call it that, but we are back on schedule for another Brown Trout and Bridge Beers podcast. It's September, I think, sometime. We're all confused on what day it actually is, but we do have a special guest with us today. Of course, we have Matt. Matt's rolling in from Cottage Grove, and of course, we're doing this from Zoom. And we've got our buddy Doggy Daddy on the podcast with us.
Howdy.
Howdy. Mr. Johnson, why don't you give us a little quick intro. Tell us about yourself.
Mike Johnson. I am the Doggy Daddy because my children are bulldogs, like actual bulldogs.
How much do those things weigh?
Butter is about 75, 80, and Pearl's about 65.
Dang, and they're like all of 12 inches tall?
Yeah, Butter looks big, but my last bulldog, Gus, he was 95 pounds. So Butter still looks like just a little boy to me. So, but they're awesome. They're fun. And I'm not fast running by any means, and neither are they. So perfect relation.
Yeah.
I'm a fly fishing dude to probably a fault. I am the program lead of Veterans on the Fly out of Southern Wisconsin TU's Madison chapter. My kind of mission in life is to get vets on the water. I'm also the co-chair for the state of Wisconsin with Trout Unlimited, their service partnership. And I'm also on the national committee, of the service partnership to has a lot of funds to do other kinds of things, improvements and all kinds of things. They're a great organization, but years ago they kind of decided that they needed to do something for veterans and first responders. And so that's what we do in Madison, all over the state and nationwide. So.
Awesome. That's awesome. How does a kid from Chicago end up in Wisconsin and start fly fishing?
With the Boston Red Sox sign.
With the Boston Red Sox. Yeah. My dad. White Sox fan, so I had to be against my dad, and so the Red Sox were. that's where my love of the Red Sox. He taught me to hate the Cubs, so I couldn't be a Cubs fan. He really instilled the pure hatred of Cubs land in me. So I had to be a Red Sox fan just so we could have a little rivalry. And we used to go see games in the spring. And usually Boston comes when it's -40 out on the south side there, so perfect. I had to see frozen games. With him. But I grew up in Chicago, outside of Chicago, like most people in Wisconsin seem to have done. Wisconsin just was somewhere I always wanted to go, somewhere where I always wanted to recreate. So I've been up here for over 20 years. And that's really where I started fly fishing. I started fly fishing when I lived just south of the border. And I heard tale of these giant salmon that were running up the stream. And I had a fly rod a buddy gave me once we just caught bluegills with. And I'm like, well, I can do that. And so I used to jump the border and go hunt the salmon and the pike and the root and up down to Milwaukee. And that kind of, it's difficult to go out in the driftless and catch little trout when you've been kind of raised on catching kings on the fly. So I love my driftless trout, but I like the bigger stuff. That's kind of where I cut my teeth. And I've been doing it for a long time. I've probably been over 25 years. I've been fly fishing. So I look like a 3-year-old. You give me a regular rod, I really look like a 3-year-old that doesn't know how thumbs work. I'm horrible with the regular gear. But that's my passion is good old fly fishing.
Just curiosity here, because, well, you've been in the game or playing the game for 25 plus years. What's a trend that you see today in fly fishing that 20 years ago you'd have been like, are you kidding me? That's not real.
I don't know, man. It seems like everyone still gets upset with like my secret spots, and there are no secret spots. There haven't been secret spots for 20 years. The only secret spots are the ones you have to work to get to. the ones you have to row for 5 hours to get to, the one you got to hike 2 miles in. Those are the secret spots. So everyone with this whole, social media is a double-edged sword, but this, you're highlighting my spots, or you got to blur out the background. And that's just like ridiculous. Everyone knows where to fish. Everyone knows what everyone knows.
Yeah. They're all in the Yellowstone.
Yeah. On the Yellowstone, of course. But I even get grief sometimes for taking pictures, and it's like, hey guys, there is secret spots. You just got to hike 3 miles out to get to them. So that's kind of something I see people with the whole spot burn thing is like, hey man, that's the beauty of being in Wisconsin here is we all own the water, and I can walk through your backyard if there's a navigable waterway in the back of it. So, yep. So that's the beauty of where we are. There's no private water. You can get to everywhere. And I think you should share that. I mean, I grew up in the day of clubs. We had fishing clubs, all over the place. And now with the internet, it kind of seems like people can, watch a YouTube video and think they know how to do it. And, that mentorship is something I think is missing today.
Yep.
I'd like to see more mentoring happen. And, you used to have to go to these like wizards on a mountaintop to learn how to do things. And now you can watch a YouTube video, but it's still doesn't take that place that.
Yeah, you used to have to hang out at the fly shop, day after day after day until, some guy took you under his wing and, said, hey, let's go fishing. Okay, perfect, awesome.
Yeah, no, it's 100% right. I mean, you kind of didn't know where to go. I mean, there were some worn out books in the library on fly fishing, and I was really blessed to have a fantastic club in Milwaukee where I met some great guys, and you bought them a couple beers and then their lips loosened up a little bit and they tell you a good spot, or if you really got lucky, they'd invite you out fishing with them. And, that's how I learned it, one-on-one with the mentor. So,
yeah. And is that what you guys, with the veterans on the fly, is that where you're kind of striving to do, is create more of that club atmosphere instead of the single event every quarter kind of thing?
Yeah. We're not, there's some great, like take a bet fishing things where, once a year they have an event and take a bunch of guys out, and those are great things. But kind of the way we operate is a very loosely based club kind of atmosphere where come when you can. I mean, life gets in the way of doing all kinds of fun things. So we try to do a weekly meetup either in the summertime, we meet up on the water. In the winter, we tie flies at the VA, or this year we're going to be at a BFW in Madison. So we kind of just have a thing where we've got some incredible instructors, some professional guides, some old hats that have been doing it for straight up 50 years. And we just have some good resources available. And, the neat thing about the way we do it is if you want an instructor, we got them for you. If you just want to grab a rod and go off by yourself, you can do that. So that's really what we try to do, is just have a comfortable atmosphere where, guys can bullshit, guys can learn some things, guys can get geared up. And just kind of, make it a relaxed atmosphere, because, I'm not a counselor. I don't, I don't try to counsel guys, but I think all of us as fly fishermen can know that, the water is a healing thing. I mean, you can have the most stressful day on the planet and go on the water, and in 10 minutes, you've forgotten about all that. So our goal is to get guys on the water, and because we know water heals. So
have you ever fished with Grant? That's pretty stressful. I'd rather be at work.
I was going to say trout fishing is not stressful. I don't think. Muskie fishing, on the other hand, then you should just admit yourself into the psychiatric ward.
It's easy for me because I started as a steelheader. And so it's the same frustration, the same insane environment. It's the same work all day for maybe a fish. So like that's been in my blood since day one. So muskie is just like, just a different time of year.
Just another fish you're not catching all day long.
Just another fish I'm not catching all day. But, like everyone always says, these fish don't live in ugly spots. I mean, unless it's a Root River in Racine. But, it's beautiful. I look forward to muskie fishing. I look forward to being a little cold. And it's insane. It's the most stupidest way to catch a fish ever. But it's a blast, man. It's a riddle to figure out, and that's what I love doing. So
you guys do take trout trips though with the veterans, right? You guys go target. I mean, you're so close to kind of that primo driftless area there in Wisconsin. What's your favorite time to take groups out down there and the driftless?
Hopper time, which is right now within this last month here, hoppers seem to be a lot more forgiving. I mean, you don't have to have the perfect cast. It's not, you don't worry about what's hatching. So hopper time, like we've got a camp out coming up. We'll be in Avalanche, Wisconsin at the West Fork Sportsman's Club on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday with my guys. And it's just a real super informal, you know, bring a tent, hang out. And we bounce around out there, but the hopper time is perfect, especially for beginners. You have that instant gratification. I mean, driftless trout are not the smartest things in the world. The cast can be difficult. So I'd say hopper time is great, but then the other great time is spring because the weeds aren't 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
So it can be a very frustrating thing, not as frustrating as musky, but you know, in the springtime, the weeds aren't 6 feet high and your back casts aren't just constantly going and wrapping around Queen Anne's lace or something like that. So this time of year is a little frustrating with the weeds, but the hopper action is just ridiculous. So,
so are you in some cases taking the same groups of your winter tying guys? So like kind of the club, are you tying for trips coming up at all, like up in the summertime? Or are you guys just kind of doing like tying demos throughout that? I guess my question was, be kind of fun to have the guys tie their own hoppers because it's fall, sure, and then go out and just crush hopper fish all day.
Sure. I mean, that's definitely something we'll do. We've got a couple of our instructors are like absolutely incredible tiers. So we're very lucky. So every week we'll do a different pattern with a different instructor. And we provide all the equipment, all the vices, all the tying materials. And then it's neat to have, we have such a spread of guys. I mean, we've got guys that tie musky flies. We've got guys that are tie these ultra realistic flies. We've got, you know, guys that are the dry flies, you know, Jedi masters. So we have like a nice bunch and we kind of, you know, keep it fresh. It depends like who shows up really. If we have a bunch of beginners, we'll work on something easier. If we have some advanced guys, you know, we'll definitely step it up a notch and take it to the next level. But you know, it's neat to have, we're so blessed in Wisconsin to have all kinds of fishing from bluegill to muskie to trout to steelhead. So it's kind of neat. We really can't go wrong, you know, tying any pattern. So we kind of stick with the basics. And if someone gets bored, we'll try something, you know, a little more exciting. But, you know, we meet up quite a bit. I think our normal volunteer hours are like over 1300 hours a year, just in volunteer hours. That's not including.
That's incredible.
So we tie, you know, we tie weekly in the winter. With COVID, it's kind of put a damper on things because we used to tie it to VA. And last year and this year, they're both completely shut down to volunteers. They're starting to open up, but, you know, it could change in a minute. So this year we're going to be tying into VFW where we can use their room. But, you know, to just do it weekly. I've got some people that come out that just tie flies. They don't even fish.
Right.
Just the whole concept of tying flies and just the concentration it takes and the suspension of reality. So I've got guys that literally strictly just tie and never fish. So it's a neat bunch of guys. It's some really interesting people, some awesome people to be hanging out with. And I love it, man. I love it. It's got me back tying. I was out of the tying game for probably a decade because I just had so many great friends that tied so well. It was like, well, what am I doing this for? And it kind of got bug again. So, you know, so I'm back tying again now with complete sickness as always. So,
yeah, that is a sickness.
Keeps you busy for sure. That's the way to do it.
We're lucky we have long winters because I mean, if we had 24/7, 365 fishing, I don't think I'd tie, but it gets awfully lonely in the winter. So I'll be down. I'm in my little hole right here. This is me and the water heater and the water softener and my little 6 foot by 6 foot room I've been sequestered to. So I can keep my mess contained and it's a mess. So
that's pretty good.
I say, I see some fish photos back there. I think I see some steelhead maybe.
We got steelhead. We got my first ever muskie back there. So this is where I get to put all my stuff. My wife's not too hip on decorating with decoys and all kinds of fun stuff. So this is where I can put my decoys, my fish decoys, all my junk. And to my heart's content, I can clutter up this room. So
yeah, I was going to say wives like to be able to shut the door on our mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a nice mantle. Like, get that out of there. It's gone. So closest I ever came to decorating.
I think if Ashley had her choice, she'd put me out in the back shed. I think that's why she keeps suggesting that we get a shed back out there with electricity and just put me out there.
Your she shed.
My she shed. Yeah, it'd be perfect.
Not a bad thing at all.
No. With you know, specifically like with trout fishing, the mentors that you were working with out of that Milwaukee club, right?
Yeah.
Were you guys mainly targeting steelhead, or were there some adventures, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago into the driftless at that time?
There were definitely some, you know, the driftless stuff was pretty good. You know, a lot of those guys concentrated like hex hatch fishing and things like that. I mean, those guys were pretty specific. I was super lucky to spend time with Royce Dam. Royce Dam was a Marine on Iwo Jima, just a fantastic guy. And I didn't even know who he was. He was an old guy that had a bunch of cool stories. And he was such a prolific tire. They sent him to Bhutan to set up a fly tying sweatshop out there. So he used to tie commercially.
Oh, Jesus.
And he would tie these married wing salmon flies, which are just the most insane thing you can possibly do. And so I was lucky enough to be friends with them. And he was getting older at the time, so I would drive. And he taught me the hex hatch. He taught me how to tie. And so just super lucky to have guys like that. They were just so full of knowledge. You could never, you know, even imagine being out there. And just super lucky to have someone like that that took me under his wing. And, you know, maybe that's where I got the bug for the whole, you know, fishing with veterans thing. But it's been a fantastic ride. And I'd love to pass that on.
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, was that kind of your first step into, you know, fishing with veterans? What was the, I guess, next steps after that that got you into the organization you're in today?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is there's like we all have these like skills, and my skill is fly fishing. And it's something, you know, a lot of people thank guys for their service, and that's a great thing to do. But you have these skills that you can use to pass on, and it's just a great thing. And you know, my father's a veteran, my uncles are all veterans, my grandparents are veterans, so I have veterans in my family, and I've been around veterans my whole life. So it's not like, you know, this weird thing to be hanging out with a veteran. I've hung out with them since I was born. But it's one of those things where if you could give back. You know, writing a check is great if you've got the money to write a check, but there's so many neat opportunities just to do something you love and pass it on. And doing this just it makes a big, you know, a big difference for me. I lost my young cousin in 2008 in Iraq, and I kind of was looking for something to do. You know, I was very upset about it at the time, and I wanted to do something to help, and figuring helping the guys that came back, maybe that was the best thing I could do with my time. You know, being a retired man, I retired at a fairly young age that I've got time on my hands to give. So this was kind of a way I bounced around a little bit. There's a lot of weird organizations out there that say they're veterans organizations, but they just want to have parties and fundraisers. And there's not a lot of boots on the ground kind of stuff. So hooking up with TU and what they were doing is just, it's a fantastic place to go. You know, a lot of people want to make their own thing. I want to make my own charity and all that stuff. And that's great. But there's so many incredible operations already out there. Like you can definitely, you know, lend your time and effort in that regard. So I was really lucky to have a fantastic group of guys in Madison that have been doing it for years. And I was able to slip right in and give them my time. And it's just a super passionate about it. It's just a blast. It's a great time.
Do you guys get a lot of people that come out to your events? I mean, or is it the same group of guys show up for tying that go fishing, or do you see new people cycling through?
Yeah, we really do. It's kind of a mix. You know, we never know who's going to show up or when. We don't take attendance or anything like that or have a sign up sheet. This is where we're going to be. We're going to have gear and instructors. And I've got it. Just my instructors are incredible. I've got, you know, a core group of probably 5-6 instructors that literally show up every time. And sometimes we have 2 or 3 guys. Sometimes we have 10 guys, but nothing, you know, we don't have like 50 or 100 guys show up at an event. I think that would be out of control. So we try just to keep it low key, like I said, a club type atmosphere. So we get a half a dozen guys show up. If you want an instructor to work on casting, you can go. We kind of call all our meetups classes, like casting classes, even though most of the time we're just fishing, but it kind of helps people that have never done it before, you know, take that initial, like just a weirdness with all the gear. I mean, all this knucklehead gear we have is so stupid that it really takes someone to show you what the heck is going on. So we always try to have, you know, if you're at a great fishing spot, you know, Madison is so blessed to have all these incredible county parks and stuff that are with great, you know, areas to park. And if during the week, we usually go on Wednesdays. During the week, you can kind of have it to ourselves. So it's neat just to meet guys on the river, but you know, that's not like 100 people showing up. It's pretty low key.
Right. And so you're in, you said the Madison area. Are there other Veterans on the Fly is around, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
So, yeah. So Veterans on the Fly is what we call ourselves. That's just our the name group. But what it is Trout Unlimited Service Partnership. So throughout the state, there's about five or six active chapters doing kind of veterans meetup and first responders. So with all the COVID times and all the crazy, we've expanded the group, not just to being veterans, but also first responders as well. So throughout the state, all the chapters of TU, there's 20 something chapters, all, you know, we'd like to have them all do something, whether it's just, you know, meeting up one time a year or having a group like we're doing, you know, it's like whatever you can do. So my goal is to, you know, go throughout the state and try to be a resource to everybody that wants to do a program like this. So if someone wants to do a program, like my information's out there, please contact me and we can get you set up. And like I said, Trout Unlimited has been fantastic for us, providing gear and providing instructors and just providing an incredible place for us to be. So I love Trout Unlimited. They're my fave.
How would veterans go about getting started or set up with you guys and the instructions?
Well, definitely they can either, we have a Facebook page and a Instagram page, Veterans on the Fly in Madison, but I can also use resources throughout the state. We've also kind of partnered up with other groups. There's a really cool group called Team RWB, Team Red, White, and Blue. And they're like a veteran group, mostly veteran run, that operate throughout the country. And they do outdoor activities. They do hikes. They do bicycles. They do marathons, outdoor activities, just like kayaking, the whole nine yards. So right. We kind of see ourselves as a resource to other groups that maybe want to do a fly fishing event. There's other groups like Wisconsin Hero Outdoors, where they do a lot of fishing and kayaking, conventional fishing. But we're kind of like helping them out with in the fly fishing realm, where we have the gear and the instructors because it's so specialized. So we kind of use ourselves as a resource to other groups. So just contacting myself, and if I can't get you hooked up with someone locally around, I had a guy talk to me from St. Louis the other day, and we're trying to get him hooked up with a group in St. Louis. So it's all about getting known. There's a lot of people doing great things out there, but it's hard to find them sometimes when you're looking for them.
Right. Yeah. Do you find it's a lot of word of mouth? You know, this guy told that guy and brought a buddy and.
Yeah. I mean, the VA has been a great resource to us for their like mental health kind of a department. We work really directly with those guys a lot, and they'll refer guys to us. Also the social media has been great. I've met, you know, probably in the last year, maybe a dozen or more guys just found us, stumbled upon us on social media. That's so great. Those tags work. So, you know, anytime I can get the word off, I'll talk anybody's ear off, just to get the ear, you know, the word out on it, because there's great people all over the country doing cool things, but you know, I don't have an advertising budget. So the hardest thing is getting the word out, you know, word out from what you're doing. So that's the hardest thing. But, you know, doing things like this, podcasts and making posts on social media and things and people sharing our stuff, you know, that's how we survive. So,
yeah, every little bit helps.
Yeah, no, it does.
So, and maybe I missed this, how long have you been with the chapter through Madison?
I've been probably running it for about the last 2.5-3 years and probably with them about 4 years now. I think it's been 4 years. Our group has been, my good friend, Mike Berta, started it out probably about 8 years ago. And he started out as Project Healing Waters.
Okay.
Healing Waters, a great group. They strictly deal with disabled veterans. And, you know, we had a need in our community for, you know, family members and non-disabled veterans to come out as well. So we kind of broke step from them and started our own thing. That's where Veterans on the Fly came from, was just we wanted to be more inclusive and serve more people. And, you know, your support structure is what you need in this world. And it's your family, it's your friends. And we don't have any rules. So we welcome everybody. And if you want to bring your fishing buddy, if you want to bring your son or daughter or your spouse, you're very welcome to. And having no rules is the way I like to play. It's easier for us. And it's just easier when there's no, you know, no barriers to go out and having a good time. So.
Right. And that might help some people who might be a little bit more on the introvert side or, you know, a little shy, and they can bring their daughter or their son or their dad, and they can get out there and get fishing. That's just good for the sport, because we're just going to get more people addicted to fly fishing.
Well, it's kind of, you know, that's kind of on the national level with Trout Unlimited. They're a little selfish That you don't know about is there's this, our veteran community is an incredible bunch of leaders. So as a byproduct of, you know, maybe taking some veterans fishing, you know, we've got some incredible leaders that have joined our fold in TU nationwide. So it's this great kind of untapped resource of natural born leaders that help TU. And we've had some fantastic people, that, you know, come from our veteran community into TU and step up and do good things. So, you know, it works both ways. Like when you come with us, you get a free 1-year membership to Trout Unlimited. National gives that to us. And then, you know, we get these great leaders that are interested in what, you know, doing what we're doing. And the more you have fun with this, the more you love it, the more you want to protect it. So it's kind of a full circle thing with Trout Unlimited. Not only are we helping veterans, but veterans are helping us as well. So it's a big deal.
What's the coolest fish that somebody from the club got on one of your outings?
We've definitely had some killer smallmouth and some big trouts. One of the fun things we do is we have a really cool place called Rushing Waters Trout Farm out in Lomira. Over by where the Southern Kettle Moraine starts. And it's a trout farm, and he lets us fish his ponds. So he'll have an order for like 100 fish, and we'll have maybe a dozen guys there. And he's like, I need 100 trout, go. So that is pretty fantastic. And he usually has some serious brood stock out there. And we've caught legit, you know, 28 inch, in, you know, trout in those ponds or those ponds are, you know, Jesus. Literally shooting fish in a barrel, but it's still a blast catching, you know.
Are you guys just putting like sweet corn on a hook and toss it out there?
Normally that's how they do, just, you know, worms, but they're very gracious to us. Our veteran group out there, he takes care of us and the Milwaukee group. And we just go out there and crush them on flies. We have to, you know, there's rules, being the fact that it's a food thing. Like all our flies are new, all our lines are new, all our rods have been out of the water for over 2 weeks. So, you know, yeah. We've got to play good with that, but it's a blast just shooting fish in a barrel.
Does he let you slab up a couple for dinner after you go and catch all of his fish for him?
They're all available in the gift shop already, deboned and smoked even if you want. So
that's fantastic.
No, out there at Rushing Waters is very gracious to us, and he's fantastic. And the trout is unbelievable. It's just really good stuff. So those are neat things. You know, we've got some, you know, we usually do pretty good fishing. Trout fishing out in the Driftless is tricky, especially when you're just saying we're going Wednesday and you're not really, you know, the conditions almost have to be perfect for you to really do good. But we've had some really good success. You know, it's a difficult thing, but it's really hard to do on your own. So it's great having a group of people that are there to, you know, give you some hints and tips, and everyone's, you know, handing each other flies and stuff. It's a pretty neat experience. So
with a big group of individuals like this, I got to imagine there's got to be stream side snacks.
Oh, so absolutely.
what's the game plan when you got this camping event coming up? What's the smorgasbord?
So I'm usually a pretty ridiculous cook. You know, I didn't get this big bite at McDonald's. I'm kind of a ridiculous cook. So even when we did our first big trip, we took 10 vets from around the state up to Hayward and fished in the Amacagan and St. Croix. And I have a huge paella pan. So I'm usually pretty good about doing a big breakfast or doing Italian beefs or something to that effect. So this weekend, I think we're just going to do some brats and burgers and maybe a kind of a grab and go kind of breakfast deal. So nothing too crazy, but I got to head to the butcher shop tomorrow and stock up on some fantastic brats. So just something simple this weekend. But yeah, I take it pretty seriously especially when we go up, you know, on a statewide trip. I want those guys to want for nothing. And, you know, meals are a big part of it. And, you know, it's logistically difficult to feed, you know, 10 guys and a bunch of instructors. Yeah. It's a tricky thing. So I'm pretty good at it. My background, like where the doggy daddy comes from, is I had a hot dog cart for many years. So I'm used to cooking a bunch of good stuff in rapid succession. So that's where the doggy daddy comes from, is the doggy daddy hot dogs. But I'm used to cooking for a crowd. So they don't go away hungry. That's for sure.
I mean, that's all Grant and I bring is hot dogs and Pop-Tarts and
and summer sausage.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing. You know, I'm lucky. We're usually, especially when we go over to Michigan, fish and steelhead and stuff, we usually bring not only a ton of beer, but a ton of steaks and brats and pork chops. And it's just, that's half the fun for me. Like I every boat I've ever owned has a grill in it. We don't eat cold sandwiches when we're on the water, you know, cook hot wings or buffalo burgers or brats. You know, the hot meal is a key element of fishing. You know, so many guys are, you know, want numbers. I want to catch 100 fish. I want to do this. I'm going to catch the biggest. I'm going to catch the best. And, you know, to me, it's about the boat ride. And to me, it's about the experience. And you know, all that stuff is secondary. The catching a fish almost interrupts a nice day. So I'm big on the whole experience. I want to be out there. Maybe it's just because I'm, you know, now I'm 51 years old and I've caught fish. I've caught big fish. I've caught the most fish. Maybe I'm just at a point where I just want to row my boat and keep my people in my boat happy and fed. And that's, you know, that's the fun of it for me is catching fish is secondary, really.
Yeah. And we've talked about that on the podcast quite a few times that, you know, it's not necessarily about just catching fish, you know, it's who you're with, you know, the whole experience. And, you know, that's kind of where brown trout and bridge beers first came about was, you know, it's not about the fish. It's about, you know, the experience and the people that you're with.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing, the whole brown trout and bridge beers concept is, there's nothing better than at the end of a day or even before you even jump on the water, sitting there on a bridge, just looking at the water, crushing a couple beers. I mean, that's heaven right there for me. 100%.
Yeah. I got to ask, what's your grill setup on your boat?
I've for years had the little Weber, the little black Weber for years and years and years. And I upgraded
to Smokey Joe.
It's not a Smoky Joe. It's like the weird, it's the gas, the propane powered one, but it's like the little square black thing.
Like the tailgater or something like that.
You can beat them up. They're inexpensive. They last, the one I had was probably 6-8 years old. And then I switched up to the Weber Q, which is like more of a cast, like, you know, tin setup, okay, which works really good. It keeps the heat in pretty good. The new boat though I've got coming is going to have a Traeger on it, a little Traeger Ranger on it. So we're stepping up the game and we can smoke meats at 30 miles an hour now. So that's the plan. Whenever the boat gets here, it will have a Traeger on it. So I'm excited for that.
You guys are going to be just rolling pork shoulders down the river. And then we're just going to, that's how Matt and I will find you on the river. I'm like, smell that? I smell pork butt. Better get on the river soon.
Smoke. Yeah, pulled pork. That would be a pretty fantastic jam out there. So
that would be amazing.
I'm just thinking of like summer, like breakfast sausage wrapped in bacon and making egg sandwiches and all of that, like fun breakfast stuff on a boat.
Yeah.
A smoker would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's the hot setup. You know, having a grill on a boat, like I said, is a necessity. It's just, especially, you know, I started drift boating and steelheading, and then now with musky times, it's cold out there. And it's just, eating a cold sandwich out of the cooler is just so depressing. I mean, you go by some guys in the Pierre Marquette, and they're eating a sandwich, and you can just see they're cold and sad. And we pull over and fire up some brats or some steaks. I mean, that just, it gets your attitude, gets your head back in the game, you know, especially a long day of muskie hunting, like nothing resets you rather than, you know, some hot wings and a brat. And it just, it resets you to get back and brutalize yourself again. So.
Yeah. I think the only thing that got us through our bighorn trip this April was knowing that around noontime where the boat was pulling over, the grill was coming out and we were going to make hot dogs on the shore. And I think a couple of days right after lunch, we ended up catching nice fish, like two of the days out of that maybe. One stretch. So
it gets your head back in the game, man. It just resets you. You start doing, you know, especially on longer trips like that, especially when things aren't going, you know, like you plan. It's just, you get in that groove where you're making the same dumb casts and the same dumb mistakes. And it's just like having a good meal just resets you. It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Good food, a little nap, and you know, you're ready to go again.
No, 100%. That's the way you want to be. It's the experience. I don't care really. I mean, I want to catch fish. I put all the effort in it. I want to catch fish, but like the boat ride is so much more fantastic and spending the day with good buddies. I mean, that's part of the deal. You know, being out there by yourself is fun, but you know, doing it for the gram is not fun. Doing it for, with, you know, two other guys or six other guys and all your buddies with you. I mean, that's fantastic, man. That's high adventure right there. So, yep. And even when things are going wrong, there's nothing better than things going wrong with six of your buddies with you.
Oh, I mean, man. Yep. Some of the best one-liners or just shit talking will occur on those type of days.
Well, they say, you know, that's adventure begins when something goes wrong. So gotta switch it up
here. I couldn't agree more. What kind of tasty beverage you got there, Mike?
This is the last of the summer wine, as they say.
The shandy.
Last of the summer shandy. So I've got to suck it up. Most of the places have downed their last keg, and it's just, you know, it's candy beer, but you're
a big aficionado of the beer, I've noticed. You know, you look at the Doggy Dad Instagram, and there's you don't have to scroll very far before you get a dog picture or a beer picture.
No, it's true. I love my beers, that's for sure, and I'm really blessed to know a lot of good people in the industry, a lot of good brewers and stuff, and just have access to good beers. I mean, everyone's like, why don't you brew your own beer? It's like, why on earth would you brew your own beer? You have all these incredible people. We have the most selection of beers on the planet than we ever have. So I'm lucky to know like the McMahons up in Door County at Door County Brewing and Hacienda. And then my buddy Trent over at Bridge Up Brewing. And they just make like really good, neat stuff to have. So, I mean, that's a weakness of mine is a bunch of beers. So might as well have some good ones. And so last of the Andy today, but I love Line & Kugel's, man. Line & Kugel's is a blast. They make some good stuff, and you know, I know they're bought out by Miller, and they're one of the big boys now. But even going to Chippewa Falls, it's cool to see the brewery and it's just a neat, you know, old school. That's where I kind of cut my teeth back in college in the late '80s. Like, you know, fancy beer back then was a Line & Kugel Bock. That was like unheard of. That was like, oh my God, what is this like beer from Mars? You have is this Line & Kugel Bock? So
Line & Kugel's original was the first beer that I ever drank.
I can't fish in the Hayward area without drinking Liney's original. Like, we're going to do Treelands in a couple of weeks. And I always bring cases of Liney's original because it doesn't feel right being up there and not.
Absolutely.
Yep.
What are you guys going to do? I heard Hams might get the axe.
I don't think it was Hams. It was like Hams Light.
Which is fine.
Okay.
What I would like to propose is, you know, Hams, because I know they listen to us all the time. If they could come up with a screw top, because screw top beers are the best boat beers that you could ever ask for. Because you don't have
pack. They need to make a silo screw top, 24 ounce screw top beer.
Now you're talking.
Because that two of those in your pack when you're walking in, that would be amazing.
Yeah. If Sims still made packs with can holders on them.
Yeah, I've got a sneaky thing that I found on like Amazon for like $12 or something like that. It's like a 6-pack sleeve holder with a strap.
Oh, so yeah. It's like a bandolero.
Yeah, yes. Just about, but they're all in the line and they stay, you know, fairly cold. I wouldn't call them cold, but I made a mistake once. I go with my buddy George. George is in the flow fishing. He's a guide out here in Lake Geneva by us. And he is just a machine, dude. The guy works out like you can't believe. And I thought, you know, we pull over, have a couple beers. I do, maybe a couple hundred yards, get back in the truck. Oh my God, we were gone. We hiked 6 miles. My phone said I climbed like 40 flights of stairs. I was like, if that van had been 10 more feet down the road, I wouldn't have made it. I collapsed. I think with my last step, I grabbed the handle of the van. So I learned right away, like 2 beers in your pocket is not enough for a whole day. So yeah, I don't go out to have cocky.
There's a fine line that you got to walk.
Yes.
Between carrying so many beers or having enough beers. So
there you go. No, it's a true thing. That's always a sticky situation. And what kind of beers? If it's a hot day, you can't have, you know, 6 IPAs. You're going to be dying. You need something a little softer. So
that's what that lemonade you're drinking is good for. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
The good old stuff. I'm drinking another one too. It's is it Shorts Brewing out of Michigan? Their Summer Parade or Soft Parade. Ooh, Soft Parade. Pretty good. Yeah, it's like this fruity thing that's, you know, it's definitely fruity, but oh, is it good? And they just came out with the Soft Parade Shandy. So I'm pretty excited. I just grabbed a 6-pack of that. So that's going in the case for the weekend here. So we'll see.
I think if you want like your most mileage per pound, the time we brought a 20 ounce Sims water bottle full of Old Fashioned Oh, night fishing.
There you go. Now
that was a hell of a night.
We weren't too far in before. I'm like, what's going on?
It'll slow you down quite a bit.
It just kind of carried us until like halfway through the night before I think we splashed the first fish, and then you crack your beer and then you kind of just mellow out the rest of the night, but you didn't need to touch much in between those, nope, those first couple hours.
Oh, that's the way to do it, man. That's the way to do it. I just wish there would be better whiskey options in plastic bottles. I mean, there's a bunch of rivers up north too where it's $300 fine for each piece of glass you have in your boat. So you can't bring, you know, good whiskey or something. So, you know, usually my boat's got Fireball in it or something stupid like that, but it's in a plastic bottle and it can stay in there all year. I don't care.
You need like those Alaska guides that have got like the 4-foot aluminum flasks and you just fill those full.
Yeah. I mean,
of whiskey.
The whiskey tastes the same no matter what it comes out of.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Absolutely. Or you batch make some old fashions and
that's not a bad thing.
Put it in an Elgin bottle.
Yes. You got to be, got a shout out to my buddies at, my buddy Doug at Soul Boxer. So that's those Soul Boxer old fashions are fantastic. They make a brand new version and a bourbon version.
And are those just, the ones you can find in the gas stations in like Green Bay area, whatever those are?
They're not little bottles. They're like in proper, you know, fifths, but they're like good, you know, California brandy, Door County cherries, like Angostura bitter.
Nice.
Like a craft cocktail in a bottle. Their motto is less time making, more time drinking. So God bless them.
Yeah, perfect.
But there's like a quality old fashioned, and that's a good thing to fill up a flask with. That's for sure.
That's a great
idea. You know, they're proper Wisconsin if they have a brandy old fashioned.
Exactly.
They need to make a pink squirrel to go bottle.
You need one of those crank blenders to make the pink squirrels.
Well, it's like you go to a Quick Trip, right? And you can like throw that thing in the machine and it makes you your milkshake. They should have those at like liquor stores for pink squirrels or at Quick Trips too. That'd be fine. But
that's what, you know, the drive through at DQ is for. Get a nice Slurpee, Mr. Misty kind of a thing. And
can you add the brandy in there for me if you want to put it in your mixer?
There you go. Top her off.
Yeah.
So yeah, you get the Mr. Misty freeze with the ice cream in it and then top that thing off with the brandy. And that's a quality concoction there.
We should talk to Dr. Rivard about, getting a Mr. Misty song about Adams and Brandy in there, Matt.
Yeah, there you go.
He's not a drinker.
No, but I'm sure he could acquire it for us somehow. Right.
He could make up the words. That's all that matters.
He's suave with that.
I think what you guys are doing and the whole concept of the brown trout and bridge beers is just like a, you know, it's a cool thing to do. And you know, even with the podcast and stuff, it's today is difficult to get people together. So anytime, you know, even if no one listens to your podcast, if you can get like a couple buddies to hang out on a schedule every now and then, it's an excuse to get together. Cause you know, this whole, we should get together next weekend thing. And like, you know, 2 years go by and you don't get together. So
yeah.
So make an excuse, man, do the podcast, make a fishing trip. You know, it's important to stay connected with your people, man. That's a big deal. It's really important, more important than people think.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, that's huge. And I think that was, I mean, part of it for me, I was like, this gives me a really good excuse to like, Matt and I kind of regularly have to hang out and talk about fishing and drink a couple beers.
Oh, it's true.
Sorry, Han. I've got this podcast that I've got to at least do once a month. You know, kind of helps break up the monotony of everything else.
No, it's a great thing. Even like, you know, with our group, it's great seeing the same guys. And, you know, after a day on the water with our group, we'll go to Culver's for dinner and just like how we have our board meetings and we'll just sit there at Culver's and plan out where we're going next week. And these, you know, it's those times that they're really important for, you know, for guys and gals to spend that time just to shut down and not just be, you know, working and doing family stuff is part of life, but to check out a little bit and just bullshit with your buddies is priceless.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. So we usually ask a couple of these questions. I'm going to start with one of them. What is the one fish you haven't caught yet that you still want to?
I haven't caught a tarpon on a fly. I've caught a tarpon on bait. And I still am sad about it, but I've never caught a tarpon on the fly. I've been fishing for them many times, but just my casting sucked, my stripping sucked, condition sucked. So I caught a 60-pound tarpon, and I get it. I'm hooked. But just I've never put the whole tarpon thing together, and it's just ridiculously expensive. And you got to go to Puerto Rico or the Keys or, you know, somewhere exciting. But I want to catch a tarpon on a fly. I've never sealed the deal with a tarpon on the fly. So we'll see. Maybe my wife will let me go back out in Cancun after explaining to her exactly what fishing in Cancun was like and what you had to drive through and where you had to go. I've been kind of forbidden to go fishing in Cancun anymore. So
sometimes the less they know, the better off we are.
Yeah, she never knew. And for decades, I would go, you know, fishing and catch a bunch of snook and try to catch tarpon and all that stuff. But we were in Cancun with a bunch of friends, and she's seen me fish for 30 something years. So she doesn't want to hear any fishing stories. So we were with friends in Cancun, and they wanted to know what I was doing all day. So I told them where we went and how sketchy the neighborhoods were and the crazy Mexican card game we broke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, walking to the dock. And my wife's eyes is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And she's like, what the hell? And I said, yeah. And then there's 12-foot crocodiles. And so she kind of was like, all right, you're done. That's it. You're not doing that stupid shit anymore. So we'll see if I get to sneak out in Cancun this spring, but we'll see.
Well, at least you got her looking out for you.
Yeah. She cares. You know, someone's got to gas her car up and make her lunch. So somebody's got.
So what's one fish that you've either caught or missed that you'll always remember? Like, is there one?
I got a ghost that haunts me. Oh yeah.
One that you'll never forget.
Well, you know, it's even worse. Fishing is hard enough, but when you screw up, it's just like, it's even more haunting. And last summer with COVID and stuff, I was able to spend a lot of time up in Door County, and the big bays on the big lake bays are just fantastic for smallmouth. And there, what people don't realize is there's big muskie up there too. And I had been catching a bunch of smallmouth the day before on a Eat a Peach Leech, one of my favorite Dave Pinchkowski flies. Love that fly. And I'd been catching a ton of smallmouth the day before, and it was kind of a feeding frenzy. So I quickly tied on just a clinch knot on this Eat a Peach Leech, and I was catching smallies the day before. So next day I was out on the big lake on the bays and throwing just on some weed lines and under some lily pads. And slow as could be, this muskie came out. Honestly, the biggest muskie I've ever seen, came up behind the fly, slow as it wanted to, opens its mouth, inhaled, and then turned. And I got to see this monster just do that big Loch Ness monster turn. And it's taken line. I set the hook once, and I already had the picture taken in my head of me holding this monster. And so I figured I better stick it one more time just to be sure. And I gave it one more tug as I'm putting it on the reel. And it just came back at me. You know that feeling when no resistance comes back. And I look, I thought, oh, he cut me off, you know, which is acceptable. That's what happens. But I get that curly cue back at the end of the line, and it was because I tied a shitty clinch knot that I don't have a picture of that monster. So that fish is haunting me. I know where she lives, and I tried this summer unsuccessfully, but hopefully with the new boat coming here, I'm going to see that guy again. But that one, man, I saw the whole thing, and it was just beautiful. Biggest muskie I've ever had on the line. And it gets bigger every time I think about it. So,
by this point, it's like 85 inches and growing.
Yeah, it's getting bigger. That mouth was like this, I swear. But yeah, one day.
Yeah, those will haunt you. I've definitely had my fair share of curly cues come back at me. Still to this day, usually at least once a day.
Well, you know, I'm pretty good at tying knots, but sometimes you get that buck fever and fish are biting, and you're just getting a fly on and getting it back out there. And, you know, I tell myself too, so many times you get lazy, especially muskie hunting, you know, you'll be throwing something for 3-4 hours and not ever look at it. And, you know, sometimes you come back and your hook broke off, and you've been fishing this thing for who knows how long with no hook, or, you know, your leader is just completely frayed. If you were ever to catch a fish on that, you'd pop them off in a second. So, so I try to tell other people and do it myself to like, look at your stuff, you know, every 15, 20 minutes, like make sure like all your stuff is is how it's supposed to be, because, you know, these fish don't come on very often. And when they do,
yeah,
it's heartbreaking to know that you're the reason you didn't do something right and you screwed up. You know, yep. Fighting Mother Nature is always a battle, but when you tie to shitty knot, that's haunting, man. It's haunting.
I'd say that a tooth nicked the line somewhere.
Yeah, I can tell that the people in the bar, but between us three, I didn't know how to tie the simplest knot on the planet.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, Grant and I, it's nice fishing with, you know, somebody that you're familiar with. And because, like you said, you get in that rhythm of just fishing and you haven't checked your rig for 15, 20, 30 an hour, you know, and you've been fishing with your hook off. And fishing with Grant, you know, we'll always, you know, if I see he's not catching fish, or, you know, if he sees I'm not catching fish, we're like, check your gear, change yeah. something, you know, move a split shot, you know, fish yep. deeper, you know, change flies. I've been standing on the bank watching you cast for the last 20 minutes and you haven't caught a thing.
Change something drunk. Yeah. Yeah. Something yep. drunk.
Eric, yep. this ain't working.
Well, I think that's too important too, like to leave the ego at home, because, you know, all of us are better teachers than we are learners, because you can sit there and watch what your buddy's doing wrong and give them grief about it the whole day. And you probably are doing the same thing. But I always say, like, if someone's in my boat and I'm rowing, I'm like, I'm going to just nitpick you to death because I want you to catch a fish. And then when you're done hearing me nitpick, just tell me to shut the hell up. But mm-hmm. like, I'm going to keep telling you, you're dropping your back cast, go over to the left more. No, 2 more feet. Like, I'm going to keep on you until you turn around and tell me to shut the hell up. Because, like, it's a team sport, man. Like, I want you to catch a fish worse than you do.
Yep.
You know, you got to listen to your buddies. You got to put your ego in the pocket and nothing's better than giving your buddy shit. So
that's part of it. One of the best parts of it.
Yeah.
Why we fish.
Well, Mike, do you have any questions for us?
I saw you have a hat. Is that the new Brown Trout and Bridge Beers hats?
There are some, and actually, no joke, Ben and I have talked about this. There's one with your name on it in a box upstairs that I need to ship to you. yeah, we've got that one, just like Matt's got on for you. So we'll get that in the mail for you.
I haven't been paying attention. I was like, wait a minute, I like that hat.
That's a fancy looking hat.
Well, you know, as a fat boy, like 5X shirts are hard to come by. I got to make them myself. So hats are like the only fashion statement I can make on this planet. That's why I have 3,000 hats.
3,000.
Oh, I got it. I probably have 250 hats at least. They just get retired and thrown in a box. I can't even bear myself to get rid of them. But yeah, as a 5X boy, I got a cool guy. The guy that does the posters for the Fly Fishing Film Tour. It's called Wandering Blue Lines. He does, like, that's a print. He does like woodcuts and he prints those things and he does shirts. Okay. So I do me a run of shirts every now and then, where he actually uses his woodcut and rolls out the t-shirt ink and he presses the shirts into it. So they're all like one-off woodcuts.
Very cool.
They're not stupid expensive. And my favorite musky one of his, it's like this zombie arm that's cut off with a fly rod in it. It's like the coolest thing. And that's my favorite. My favorite shirt of his, but yeah, check out the Wandering Blue Line guys.
We'll check them out.
I'll make that. Cool. Someday we'll probably do t-shirts.
Yeah, it's pretty. T-shirts are cool. We've been doing like his fundraisers with what is it called? I can't think of the Custom Ink, I believe it's called.
Okay.
And Custom Ink will do like damn near one-offs. Like we've done a couple runs where we've done a fundraiser where maybe the shirt costs $15 and we can sell them for $25 and people go right to the website and do all the ordering through them. And
oh, once nice. We sell
20 shirts or something like that, then the run's going to be done. And they just sent us a check. It's fantastic. It's a great way of doing a little fundraiser for us and be able to get some merch like this, you know, for ourselves. So that's kind of a neat route to take with that. So, you know, hats are always like everyone, when we first started, everybody wanted hats. And I'm like, how about we get rods, guys? We need gear. Right. Like, let's get gear. And then one of our instructors was like, hey, I want some hats. And I'm like, hey, you know, I want to, you know, build our basic gear more. I want to get some rods in the guy's hands. He goes, well, how much do hats cost? I'm like, 50 hats are like $800.
Yeah.
Whipped out his checkbook and wrote me a check for $800 and says, we want hats. I said, okay. We'll put
Hats it is.
but yeah, so balls always getting rods in the guy's hands, like nothing, especially during COVID. I sent out maybe 15 rods to guys. I'm like, this
That's
is
making, awesome
that I've got, you know, like 20 rods sitting in my garage and no one's using them. Like, it makes me nuts. Like, these, they're dying on the vine here. Like, we got to get out. So I was pretty adamant last year with COVID of getting, you know, rods shipped out to guys, because they're doing, it just breaks my heart to see these five weights sitting in my garage doing nothing.
So with that said, if somebody, because we didn't really cover the specifics, if somebody wants to find Veterans on the Fly, Instagram, Facebook, website, what do you guys have?
Sure. Yeah. No website, because that costs money. We're on a low budget. So we've got Facebook, Veterans on the Fly. SWTU is my group out of Madison. So it's Veterans on the Fly. SWTU is the Instagram page, and Veterans on the Fly on Facebook. We also have a statewide service partnership Instagram, which I think it's WITU service partnership. My buddy Matt Cade, who's my partner in crime, he's a Coast Guard veteran. Him and I kind of 1-2 punch. The state of Wisconsin being co-chairs, I think it's important to have, you know, Matt's a veteran himself and myself being a civilian, that it's important to have veterans in the mix in leadership with this stuff, because there's a lot of civilian groups that veterans aren't too comfortable being with, but like half of my instructors are veterans as well. So we try to keep a good mix of vets out there just for the comfort level. But then we also, if you look on the Instagram, we do a yearly trip. We raised funds for the trip last year. It didn't happen. So we still have some funds, and we'll do most likely next summer. We'll plan on doing another trip up north. You can donate right to Trout Unlimited there's a link in our Instagram. Or you just your local TU chapter, you can earmark any funds. And not even funds, like if you have some old rods and reels that are laying around, like we live off donations in that regard. Okay. We've got incredible gear that's been gifted to us, and we just pass it right on to our veterans. So if you've got some old stuff laying around, you know, these maybe the rod you learned on that you don't use anymore, you know, look up a group in your area, you know, just TU and tell them you want it to go to the veterans, or just get it to TU. They'll get it in someone's hand that needs it better than your garage does.
That's good to know. Cause I think us who have been in the sport for, you know, a while, we've accumulated a lot of gear, and we all have our favorite rods that we fish, and, you know, the ones that just, like you said, sit in the corner of the garage. And, you know, why, what's the point of having a fishing rod that's not fishing? So
yeah,
you know, donate it to some good organization that's going to put it to use and get it in someone's hands that, you know,
and appreciate. No, that's very true. There's so many neat things you can do with just being, you know, simple actions can make a big difference. So, you know, that's what we try to do. I'm excited right now. We've got Tom from Chippewa River Custom Rods is building us a batch of six five weights.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Custom weapons on the fly rod. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. And Tom's a great guy.
I've got his 10 weight, that Musky Saber, which I love. And I just picked up a 7 weight from him, and that's a smallmouth machine. I love his rods. Bang for the buck. They're gorgeous. You can't beat them.
Yeah, Matt and I were talking about that because we're both big fans of the Synchro Bank Robber as a streamer rod that isn't made anymore. So I think hopefully maybe next spring we can get up and go test a couple of Tom's 6 weights. And I'm pretty sure we'd be converted pretty fast.
That 7 weight I have, it's neat. It's not, it's, you know, it's called a fast streamer rod, but it's really, you know, it's kind of got that not like a fiberglass kind of feel, but you can feel it bend. I'm a nut for Winstons, and that softer Winston feel, even though they're faster rods, you can kind of feel it bend a little more and know what it's doing. And that's why I love that Musky Saber, and that 7 weight's the same way. Whatever blanks he's using are just fantastic. They look just beautiful. Does a great job. I mean, he used to build rods for St. Croix. So, from a professional standpoint, they're flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up ordering his 12 weight a few weeks ago, and that thing is an absolute rocket. But like the finishing touches on it, it's just a beautiful, beautiful rod.
Yeah. I mean, bang for the buck, they run with the big boys, and what you're paying for them is damn near discount pricing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's the only rod made in the Wisconsin tavern. So,
he closed a bar down in Wisconsin to make fishing rods.
Yeah, well, it still has his license, so it's still legal.
Yeah, we could still go get an old fashioned and watch Tom make a rod. I think that should be a next and our episode when we go there in the springtime.
And it's wild.
We might have to go in this late fall, early winter.
Yeah,
that's after true all too. all the big fish are done.
Yep.
Well, hopefully my boat gets here soon, man. So just know you guys always got a seat in a boat. I'm always looking for troublemakers to come with. So,
well, and you get up here towards the Twin Cities and we don't have Traegers, but we've got other grilling things that we can do some grill outs and eat some food.
Yeah. What's the biggest thing is a steak with an asshole is a horrible meal, but a hot dog with a good guy is incredible. That's where you want to be living. That's living large.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us tonight. I'm glad we could get you on for our kickoff of doing podcasts again. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me get the word out. Like I said, use me as a resource, even if you're not in Wisconsin. I've got friends throughout the country doing kind of similar things. Definitely use me as a resource. Feel free to put my cell phone in there. And anytime you're messaging Veterans on the Fly, you're messaging right to me. We're a awesome. Small group. None of us are paid. We're 100% volunteer. So we can get you hooked up with something in your area. Like I said, I know guys throughout the state that are doing similar things that we are in Madison. So, if you're looking to get out or you know a veteran, pass it on to them because getting our warriors out on the water is a special thing and it's a blast doing it. So,
yep. Appreciate and we'll link to all this stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes and
appreciate it.
Everybody can find you.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I know you boys always got a cold beer in my cooler with your name on it. So,
be careful with that.
Appreciate that.
Hey, man, that's what they're for.
Appreciate it.
Well, keep on, guys. I've enjoyed your cast over the years here and enjoy your attitude towards fishing. And it's awesome to get to hang with you guys. So rock and roll.
Well, thank you. Give those Bulldogs a little head scratch for us and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Thank you much, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Bye-bye. Mike.